Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 87, Grimoire of the Rift. I am your host, the Hoff Chris Hoffman, and with me is this week's co-host, CJ Chris Johnston.
Hey, how's it going, Chris? Thanks for having me on Power Pros once again.
Things are going pretty good over here, and thank you very much for joining me.
Of course.
Of course, we are back to talk about what's going on in the world of Nintendo. There's not any, you know, amazing groundbreaking news this week, but there are still a lot of things to talk about. And of course, then we've got this week's big topic, which is going to be the biggest jerk enemies in some of our favorite classic video games. But before we get to that, why don't we kick things off with some news? Specifically, Nintendo has announced that there is a Fire Emblem Echoes Collector's Edition coming out in North America alongside the regular game on May 19th. Of course, we knew that there was a special edition being released in other territories, but until now, there was no confirmation it was coming out in North America, but here we go. It is going to be coming out for $59.99. It's going to include the game, a hardcover art book, a music CD, a reversible cover sheet based on the original Famicom game's packaging, since this is a remake of Fire Emblem Gaiden on the Famicom, and then it comes with a pin set of Alm, Celica, and Marth. Personally, I think it's a pretty neat-looking set. I'm glad that Nintendo is continuing to do these, and I'm hoping to add it to my collection. What are your thoughts?
I could not agree more. This is a fantastic set, and with most Nintendo special editions, I'm sure it will get snapped up very quickly, and you won't see it sitting around on store shelves very much.
It went up for pre-order on Amazon earlier today, and I think it was gone in about 20 minutes.
Yep.
GameStop might still have it. They've had it on and off, but I'm not sure right now.
Yeah, I like the fact that Nintendo does these special editions for games that warrant them, like the recent Zelda editions, mm-hmm. and we've got this Absolutely. Fire Emblem set, and I kind of hope they continue that for other games. I'd love to see a Splatoon 2 set that had like a custom Switch carry case or something like that. It'd be fantastic.
Yeah, that'd be pretty nice. Yeah, I mean, I'd love to see them do a Mario one.
Yes.
One of these days. Why not do it for Super Mario Odyssey as well?
I agree.
But yeah, this is looking pretty darn cool. I mean, I was going to get the game anyway, but you know, this makes it all the sweeter.
Yes, I think fans of Fire Emblem are really, they've lucked out with how Nintendo is treating them. It's great.
Yeah, very much so. Nintendo also revealed some of the details on how this game is going to use Amiibo.
Amiibo!
Of course, Alm and Celica are going to be coming out in a two-pack alongside the game, and they're going to be used to activate exclusive dungeons, as well as used in conjunction with something called Mila's Turn Wheel to summon CPU-controlled illusory heroes for one turn in battle by sacrificing some of their health.
Huh.
I don't really know what that means, but it certainly sounds interesting. And of course, in addition to them, you'll be able to use all the existing Fire Emblem amiibo, including the upcoming Korin amiibo, to summon ally monsters to aid you in battle.
Nice. And I'm sure you can use them in Breath of the Wild to summon fish and various other cooking implements in your game.
Yes, probably nothing special and exclusive, but yeah, I think like all the rest, they'll be used for getting a few extra goodies in that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's cool to hear that they're going to have some neat functionality. As I mentioned on previous episodes, I'm really impressed by the functionality in Breath of the Wild. It's making me come back and actually use Amiibo time and time again. And hopefully the way they're implemented in Fire Emblem Echoes will make me keep using it repeatedly as well.
Absolutely.
Speaking of cool games I'm looking forward to, there was some news a day or two ago about Bloodstained Ritual of the Night. That, of course, is the successor to the Castlevania series from Koji Igarashi. And he sent out an announcement via email saying, "We've got some good news and some bad news. The good news is it is coming to Switch. The bad news is it's not coming out on Wii U anymore." And the way that they framed this, when they sent out the email, they made it sound like, oh man, we're so sorry, we really apologize to all our backers, we know you wanted it on Wii U, but you know, the system's just too old, it's not going to happen. And I think that most people, myself included, are probably like, who cares? I'm very happy it's coming to Switch.
Yeah.
This is much more exciting.
Yeah, so you backed the Kickstarter?
I did. I backed it for some relatively high tier, and I think to get a physical edition of the game.
Nice.
Did you?
I did not back it because I think the lowest tier was a fairly hefty investment. Not that I don't want to play the game. Of course I do. But I watched the Kickstarter fairly closely, and when it was clear that it was going to make its goal, I decided I would just hold off and just buy it whenever it comes out. So, but I'm very happy that they've announced that it's coming to Switch.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. I did get to play the game when it was at E3 last year, and so far it's coming along really well. I play it on Xbox, not on Nintendo system, of course. But all evidence points to it being a worthy successor to the Castlevania lineage.
Yes, indeed. Thankfully, Nintendo has Unreal Engine support on the Switch, mm-hmm. so that has to have contributed to this coming over.
Yeah, I suspect you are correct. Of course, it is by Intercreates, the same development team that worked a lot on Mighty No. 9, but I don't think we need to hold that against them. I think they learned a lot from that experience, and I think that things they've been doing with this all point to a much, much better game than that one was.
Yeah, even the demo that they had at E3, I heard from a number of people that it was quite impressive and that there's really nothing to worry about with this game.
That seems to be the case so far, so I'll keep crossing my fingers and hope it turns out that way in the end. I don't think the game is going to be coming out until maybe next year, though?
Yeah, it's a 2018 game, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll still have a while to wait, but very cool nonetheless. But on the topic of cool stuff coming out on Switch, we have found out from Square Enix that a Seiken Densetsu collection is coming out on Switch in Japan. That, of course, is the series that's probably better known as the Mana series, or Secret of Mana, here in the U.S. And this collection includes the first three games in the series. The first one was released here on the Game Boy as Final Fantasy Adventure. Then there was Secret of Mana, which came out as a big hit on the Super NES. And then Seiken Densetsu 3, which we never even got in North America. And those are all going to be included in one package on Switch. And that is pretty darn exciting, in my opinion.
Yeah, especially because we never got the third one. Hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully this means we're getting it in the U.S.?
Well, I hope so. I really hope so. I'm crossing my fingers. I'm hoping they localize it and bring it out here, and we all get to play this lost 16-bit game that we never got to play. Because, man, by 16-bit standards, the game looks gorgeous. In fact, by almost any 2D standards, the game looks gorgeous. It looks amazing. And, of course, both Secret of Mana and Seiken Densetsu 3 both have multiplayer co-op, which is something that a lot of, fantasy RPG games like that don't have. So, really looking cool. But I think even if it doesn't come out in North America, because you can do region-free eShop purchases, I might just go ahead and get it from Japan, because that's how much I would like to play this game.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. And I also wonder if they would go the same route they did with I Am Setsuna and do a physical release in Japan and digital only elsewhere.
Yeah, that's possible.
Because really, I mean, what is putting the English ROMs of Final Fantasy Adventure and Secret of Mana in the game? I mean, yeah, they didn't do a translation for the third game, but a fan translation exists, and I would imagine they could probably do something there. I don't know.
Maybe. That would be pretty uncommon. Companies don't usually do things like that. So
that's true.
That's the thing they have to deal with. Is it worth their investment to localize this ancient Super NES game? Hopefully they will. I mean, they've been bringing out almost everything, it seems, in all territories. So I'm pretty hopeful that it's going to come out here.
Yes.
But again, like I said, even so, I think I would go ahead and get the Japanese one and, wade through it somehow just to experience this game. Because it seems pretty darn great.
I agree. Do you think this means, with both this and then the existence of the Neo Geo games, does this mean that Virtual Console, when that does come to Switch, is not going to be in the same form that it has taken before?
I don't know. That's not what I'm taking it to mean. I was just assuming that in this case, Square Enix is like, we know Nintendo doesn't quite have anything in place yet for Virtual Console, so let's just go ahead and do our own thing, do this collection, and get this out there for the fans who want to play this kind of title. They're also positioning it as a 25th anniversary celebration of the franchise, even though that was technically last year. So maybe that's the reason they're selling it as a collection and not just as individual Virtual Console titles. Or maybe it's because it includes one Game Boy game and two Super NES games, and in the past, Virtual Console Game Boy titles were only exclusive to 3DS. And as far as the Neo Geo stuff goes, that company, Hamster, has been doing these arcade archives for a while now, and they've just sort of been doing it on you know, across all consoles and platforms. So it kind of makes sense just to continue using that method and bring over these arcade games sort of in that format. But yes, it does make me wonder just how far off Virtual Console might be.
Mm.
At any rate, I am definitely looking forward to this collection. It is going to be out in Japan on June 1st. And I'm going to keep crossing my fingers, hope that they announce it for North America soon. Maybe it'll be on display at E3, or maybe I'll be importing. Who knows? Either way, very exciting.
Yes.
And that is not the only nifty RPG announcement out of Japan. The folks at Atlus have revealed that Radiant Historia Perfect Chronology is coming to the 3DS over in Japan. It's coming out on June 29th. And that is an enhanced port of the original Radiant Historia, which came out, boy, I think more than 5 years ago on the original Nintendo DS.
Hmm.
And it's going to include that original game plus new scenario content. Did you ever play the original Radiant Historia?
I did not, but I heard that it was really good.
It was really good. I played through the entire game. I sadly don't remember very much of it, but I remember that I really enjoyed it. It had a really unique combat system, the way you would sort of knock enemies against each other. And then, of course, as the title implies, it has this whole time travel element, very much like Chrono Trigger. And so you're warping to, I guess, like different important points within your own adventure. It's not like you're just necessarily going to various points throughout history that are, you know, thousands of years apart or anything like that. Hmm. But you can go back to key points in your adventure and make different choices, and that can completely change the way the adventure unfolds. And so there's a whole lot to see. So I did beat the game. I got the main ending, but there were still lots of things that I don't think I ever actually completed. So if this comes out over here, I really look forward to playing it again, maybe doing, you know, everything this time, 100% completion. And whatever this new content is, I'm very excited about that as well. So this is another one I am definitely crossing my fingers for.
Yeah, it sounds like the perfect reason to go and replay a game and get some new content out of it, too. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a real good game, great sort of a hidden gem of sorts on the DS. And it's going to be awesome that people are going to have a new chance to play it.
Absolutely.
Speaking of cool third-party news, Sega had some news out at South by Southwest last weekend all about Sonic the Hedgehog. They finally pulled up the curtain on their new 3D Sonic game that's coming out later this year. It is known as Sonic Forces. Did you get to check this out?
I did. I watched the trailer, and yep, looks like Sonic the Hedgehog in 3D. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes, it is. It looked like fairly traditional 3D Sonic the Hedgehog. He's running through a city that's being decimated by these giant robots. Things are exploding. Projectiles are raining down. And you're using traditional Sonic implements like boost pads and springboards and zip lines. Charging through enemies, using homing attacks, collecting rings. But beyond that, it was like, well, we really don't know a whole lot else about the game. All that stuff, yeah, that's fairly par for the course, but at least it looked pretty darn good.
Yeah, and it's from the team that did Sonic Colors and Sonic Generations as well, so it'll probably play really well, too.
Yeah, I have high hopes for it. And the fact they're saying it's a lot like Sonic Generations and is going to include multiple play styles, including classic 2D and modern 3D, really makes me hopeful. I don't know if you played much Sonic Generations, but I did, and I loved it. It is my favorite Sonic game in, I don't know how many years, within the last decade, 15 years. Yeah, I was really, really impressed by that.
Yeah, Generations was really good. And I think, didn't I see like, so there's like a new Sonic, but I also saw like old style Sonic in the trailer for this one too. So maybe it's got Generations side to it as well.
Well, yeah. And in fact, since they're saying there's three gameplay styles, I'm wondering if it's not going to be modern Sonic, classic Sonic, and then Sonic Boom Sonic thrown in there as well.
Oh my God.
I mean, obviously that character does not have the greatest reputation. Although the last 3DS game wasn't bad at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if that could be the third play style, is bring some Sonic Boom in there.
But he's got longer legs, so he'll be towering over the other two Sonics.
Yes, I suppose that would be a bit of an issue. Yeah, like I said, we don't really know that much else about the game. There's still going to be a lot to learn. The folks at Sega have gone on record saying that other Sonic characters will be in it, but they won't necessarily be playable. So, you know, a lot of times people are like, oh, I don't really care to play as Tails or Amy or Knuckles. And while they're not saying there isn't going to be any other alternative playable characters, it seems that some of these characters might be relegated to the sidelines this time.
This is going
to
be Big the Cat's awesome return to video games, right?
Big the Cat gets a pretty bad rap. And yes, some of it is well-deserved, but I don't hate him as much as everybody else does. I feel like he's very down on his luck and could use a little belly rub from time to time.
I think you're right.
It's a very big belly, too, so it's easy to do.
I think some of the characters from Sonic Heroes or Knuckles Chaotix, the ones that you don't even remember, like Charmy B or something, like those definitely should come back. Should not come back in Sonic Forces.
The one that I like the least is Silver the Hedgehog, since that was the one that was cooked up in Sonic 2006. You know, that's really all I know about him, is he showed up and suddenly the franchise went down the tube. So.
Blame it all on him.
I do. I really do. Mm. So yeah, it'll be fun to learn more about this game in the months to come. Supposed to be out around the holidays on Switch. But then there was also news about the other Sonic game that everybody is very excited about, that being Sonic Mania. Sega released a new trailer for Sonic Mania, this time showing off the Flying Battery Zone, which is a remix of an old stage from Sonic and Knuckles. As I recall, back then, that was a pretty darn challenging stage. There was lots of opportunities to, you know, plummet to your death, because, like it says, it's the Flying Battery. You are up in the sky. So, but there's lots of tricky jumps. You're running around these big cylindrical mesh things. And then, I don't remember this in the original, but now it looks like there's anti-gravity parts and these big old garbage pits. But it looks like there's just a lot of stuff going on. These levels in both this stage and the stages I've seen previously are just, you know, pretty chaotic and crazy and fun and action-packed. Did you get to check this out? Are you any more excited about Sonic Mania than you were before?
I'm kind of on a media blackout to an extent for Sonic Mania, because I already know I want to buy it. So I don't want all of the stages to be spoiled for me. But everything that I have seen so far has just looked really amazing and so true to the original 16-bit side-scrollers. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Which are some of my favorite games ever. So I'm still really looking forward to Sonic Mania.
Yeah, so am I. I got to play a couple of stages not too long ago, and it was really fun, and this looks just as good as the other stuff, so we're looking forward to it. The bad news, though, is that to go along with this new stage, they announced the game has been delayed a little bit. Originally, it was supposed to be sort of a late spring release. Now it looks like it's coming out sometime in the summer, but you know, I'd much rather have them add a little extra polish and wait a little bit longer than have a game that's you know, still a little rough around the edges.
I completely agree. And, you know, who knows? It's got to be difficult to get Sonic Mania ready for all of the systems, all the platforms that they have announced it's coming to. So a few more months, that's fine with me.
Yep, definitely not the end of the world. Of course, I checked my Amazon account recently, and I was pleased to see that they had already sent me my copy of Sonic Mania, the collector's edition. That was very exciting. Except for the fact that it's totally not true. And like I said, it's been delayed until summer. But Amazon, at least on my mobile device, seems to think they've already sent it to me.
From the future.
Yes. Sent it into a wormhole to show up in or 5 months. Anyway, that does it for the news this week. Why don't we take a little intermission, and then when we come back, we will have this week's big topic, which is video gaming's biggest jerk enemies. Here we go. Films are finally here. Perform it for you. If you know the words, you can join in too. Put your hands together if you want to clap as we chase you through this monkey rap. DK, Donkey Kong. He's the leader of the bunch. You know him well. He's finally back to kick some tail. Shoots ya, it's gonna hurt.
If you choose her, you'll not choose wrong.
With a skip and a hop,
she's one cool car.
All right, we are back, and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is video games' biggest jerk enemies. And by that, I mean the enemies that I would encounter when I was playing mostly classic games, and I would see these guys, and I would be like, oh man, not that guy. Why do I have to fight that guy? I'm not even talking about bosses. I'm just talking about just regular old enemies that you could encounter in practically any level of some of these classic games. Some of them, you know, you don't mind. No one really cares that they're fighting a Goomba. No one really cares that they're fighting a Koopa. You don't even really care about Noctorok. I don't anyway. But some of these guys, they're just the worst. Can't stand them. So we put together a list of our least favorite enemies, biggest jerk enemies, and we will go down this list right now. So the first one I've got on my list is the Big Eye from Mega Man. Do you remember the Big Eye, CJ?
I have to say that I don't, only because I only rented the Mega Man games back in the day.
Oh, my.
And I have never really gone back and played very much of them, despite owning multiple copies of multiple Mega Man games. So I have never encountered the Big Eye.
Well, that is very unfortunate that you haven't played those games, but not so unfortunate that you have not encountered the Big Eye, because he is really annoying. He kind of looks like an old-fashioned, like, 80s telephone on a pogo stick. He was big and red. He's like one of the biggest regular enemy in the game, I would say. And all he would do is jump at you. But he was very unpredictable as to whether he was going to do a short hop or a big hop that would jump right over you.
Oh.
And of course, if he's doing a big jump, then you just run under him and just keep on going, because he is he's a sponge. He will take so many hits before he goes down. If all you've got is your regular Mega Buster, or even most special weapons don't really take him down fast enough, you know, then you're going to be in big trouble. So the best thing to do is just run away, but you never could really know, is he doing a big one or a little one? And of course, usually he'll do a little jump at the time you're choosing to run, and he'll just land right on you, and you'll take massive damage. Takes like a third of your health away.
I always hated that about classic games, where they were difficult to begin with, and then you have an enemy whose movement is not telegraphed or predictable. And I think a lot of the enemies in this list fall into that category. So it's a common gameplay trope of classic games.
Yeah, he was definitely unpredictable. I mean, I would, you know, sometimes I would use the magnet beam to create platforms just so I could, like, get around him and climb over him and wouldn't have to deal with him. So that was one trick I would use. If I did have the Ice Slasher from Iceman, then you could freeze him and you could, you know, usually mash the button fast enough to finish him off before he unfroze. You could take him out that way.
Hmm.
But for the most part, he was a really annoying enemy to deal with and would inflict quite heavy damage on you. So he is definitely on here as one of my biggest jerk enemies.
Nice.
Who do you have on your list?
On my list, I've got the birds in Ninja Gaiden.
Ah, the birds.
First show up on, is it the second or third stage of Ninja Gaiden? And they fly very quickly.
Yes.
From left to right and in a swooping motion. So it's hard for you to judge exactly where they're going to be when you're doing a jump, and inevitably, while you're jumping, you're mid-air, you collide with one of these guys and fall to your death.
Yeah, they will knock you right into that pit.
Yes.
For some reason, I don't really understand why, but the birds in that game, they just hate ninjas. They really,
really
hate ninjas. And so they are always out on some mission to just knock you into any pit they possibly can. I mean, most of these, like I said, these are ones where I would see them and cringe and be like, oh, not this enemy. But with these guys, you didn't even get a chance to do that because they would just come out of nowhere.
No.
As I played the game, you know, I sort of learned where if you went really slow, you could sort of trick them to coming out, and then maybe you could, you know, hit them and kill them, and then you could still make the jump after. They'd be like, ha-ha, I tricked you, stupid bird. Now you're dead, and I made my jump.
but the worst part, though, is if you backed up too far while you were trying to hit them, they would respawn, because Ninja Gaiden did that terrible thing where if you went off the screen and went back, it would just respawn the enemy forever. And that was horrible.
Yeah, yeah. That was the bad side. You could end up with a spot where it just keeps coming. Just bird, 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 bird. Yeah, those guys sucked.
Mm-hmm.
Birds are no good.
No.
So I'm coming on to the next one on my list. I'm picking the Medusa heads from the Castlevania series, but especially in Castlevania 1, it seems like they're especially bad.
I completely agree. They are so terrible.
They are the worst. And you know, you mentioned that a lot of these enemies are very unpredictable, but Medusa heads, they're actually very predictable. They move in a very set parabolic pattern. So in theory, it's like, okay, well, I can tell exactly where they're going to go, but it was still like the most annoying thing in the world somehow, because it would usually happen when you're making precarious jumps, you're on moving platforms. And so, you know, lining up that whip attack to hit them when they're at the right spot, it was just such a pain in the butt, and they led to so many horrible, obnoxious deaths for poor Simon Belmont and all his relatives.
Yes, and they also usually appeared in a series, right? So if you were hit by the first one, you would sort of lose your mojo, and even if you sort of knew where the first one was going to be and what that one's path was going to be, if you got hit by it, then you were totally lost. You were definitely going to be hit by the second one before you could recover.
I never really thought of it that way, but you're kind of right. Yeah, yeah. Once you make one mistake, it was really, really hard to get back into that groove, and they would just keep coming at you. Yeah, stupid Medusa heads.
That's right.
They give me nightmares.
Time to get that Game Genie out, where you have invincibility.
What else you got?
Well, so when I was a younger player, the Hammer Brothers at the end of Super Mario Brothers 1 were the type of enemy that just made my hands sweat so profusely. It's because in part their movement was a little bit unpredictable, because they would hop, and also the pattern in which they threw hammers at you was slightly different. And Mario's jump at the highest point, I died at least a dozen times, maybe more, from trying to jump over them and just getting hit with a hammer as they jumped. And it was extremely annoying, because this is really, they appear in great numbers in like the last regular level, I think 8-3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just so annoying. So annoying.
Yeah, if you get to that stage with fireballs, it's a cakewalk. But if you don't, oh man, it's just the worst.
See, I never did as a kid. Never got there.
Yeah, it was hard.
Fire
it
Mario.
It was hard to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, early on in the game, they were pretty tricky, too, when there was, you know, usually it was two of them, and then they'd have those two platforms, and be like, okay, you know, are you going to just go underneath them and hit them from below? But, of course, they would love to just jump from one platform to another, and just always at the wrong time, it seemed. They would just always do something and catch up. It's like, oh, I was just about to run past him, and then he jumped to the other platform, and he got me, or something like that.
That was at least a little bit easier, because you did have those two platforms that they were on, and you could... If they were both on the second platform, you could fairly safely run underneath.
Right, right.
But when they have no platform, they're completely unpredictable. Like you can't be exactly sure when to jump.
Yep, yep, absolutely. The next one I've got is the Iron Knuckle from Zelda 2: The Adventure of Link. And those are the knights. They're in pretty much every castle. And you know, I guess they're kind of predictable too, in that, you know, you just have to watch them really, really closely. And that's the trick. You know, you can tell what they're going to do, but you only get a split second to react, because they've got shields, you know, protecting themselves, and then they have their sword where they can either attack high or attack low. And you have to immediately react to that. You have to try to, you know, block high or block low, depending on how they're attacking. And meanwhile, you're trying to attack high or low, depending on where their shield is. And in theory, it sounds easy, but in practice, you know, it requires really, really quick reflexes. And boy, just the result of that, you know, was so many deaths in that game for me. And it took me years to understand this. I had to really just watch how they're pulling their arm back, if it's high or if it's low, and react to that quickly to block and defend. And if you don't know that, it just seems like, oh man, what the heck are they doing? How am I ever going to overcome these guys? And they just get stronger and stronger. You know, the blue ones you get kind of later on, they can suddenly throw the swords, and, you know, catching up to them and being able to even attack them, such a pain in the butt. But yeah, those guys can be really challenging. I mean, sometimes you get lucky and you can just stab them right away and take them out, but sometimes it seems like that fight just goes on forever.
I think I remember, so I played Zelda 2 back in the day, of course, but most of my memories about Zelda 2 are just how much I didn't like the game overall. But when NES Remix came out, I think one of the stages in the Zelda 2 section is fighting an Iron Knuckle, if I remember correctly. And I did have to do that multiple times.
Yeah, they can be pretty tough. Although, I should probably say they're not even the most annoying enemy in the game. I think I would give the most annoying enemy to the Deiras. And I know that's not the only game they appeared in, but they're like these alligator things with axes. And at least the Iron Knuckles, you could, you know, really closely watch their pattern. You could block and defend. But these stupid alligator guys, their attacks were pretty much unblockable. And when the advanced versions would just start throwing their axes at you, and so you're having to jump over the axes and still try to get in close and score a hit, and then quickly, immediately, you get like a millisecond to back away so you don't get hit. Ah, man, they're a pain in the butt too. But there's a lot fewer of them than there are the Iron Knuckle, which is why the Iron Knuckle, to me, gets the nod as the biggest jerk enemy in the Adventure of Link.
Awesome.
Not awesome. They're not awesome at all. They suck.
They're jerks.
They are.
All right, well, my next one is from Punch-Out, and it's Super Macho Man.
You know, I was wondering if we should even include Punch-Out characters on here, because it's almost like all bosses in that game. But I'll give it to you.
There are some that are more annoying than others, for sure. And Super Macho Man, when I was just a wee youngster, gave me so much trouble, and I even had the NES Advantage, so I was armed with turbo fire, but I fought him so many times and had so much trouble with Super Macho Man. I did
was
finally
it a super
beat
macho spinning punch that would take you out in one hit that did you in?
I think that might have been it. Yeah, I mean, it it was so hard to time, and I think part of it was just being younger. And again, this is a battle that made my hands really sweat.
So yeah,
it made it all the more difficult. No save states back in the day, so I couldn't immediately revive myself. But yeah, Super Macho Man was a huge jerk to me when I was like 8 years old.
My super spin punch is totally tough. I think that's what he would say in between rounds.
I think you're right.
And then when he knocked you down, he would just sit there and wiggle his man boobies at you.
That's
right.
Right. Yeah, he would.
So that
taunt
was the worst.
You. That is the worst.
And if it's not, you know, humiliating enough, you're just kind of chuckling as well because he's wiggling man boobies at you. So
that's right.
You know, it makes it that much harder to mash the button and get yourself up, and face those mighty pecs.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's definitely a jerk in a lot of ways.
Agreed.
The next one for me, and I'm not really putting these necessarily in any particular order, because this guy's not nearly as bad, I think, as the other ones I've talked about. But the next one on my list is Fanto from Super Mario Bros. 2. Those are the guys that would protect the keys. So you'd go into the room, and you'd grab the key, and suddenly they would come to life, and they would totally start chasing you. And there was really nothing you could do about it, except to drop the key. And if you drop the key, then they'll just go away and they'll leave you alone and you can pick up the key again. And then they'll come back after a little bit. And, you know, once you learn to just, you know, drop the key and wait and not worry about it, that's fine. But until you figure that out, it's like, oh, these guys are relentless. They're pursuing me. Can I get through the door with this key before they, you know, come and hit me and kill me? So they were just kind of, you know, freaky the way that they would just relentlessly pursue you like that. And I don't even know if you could kill them even if you had like an invincibility star. But those were hard to come by anyway. So either way, I just, you know, never liked those guys because of the way that they would just, you know, pursue you nonstop until you pretended to give up.
Well, and the worst part about it was you first steal the key and they have that little sound and they sort of shake and come to life. And getting out of the pipe where you got the key was half the battle. It's like, oh, I've got to like do this really quickly. So it took like, you know, two or three jumps to get out of there before you were safe. And once you were out, I always dropped the key immediately.
Well, sometimes I learned, you know, just to drop the key even before I got out of there, because, you know, you could do that. And that does make it a little bit easier. But yeah, if you're trying to get out and you know, like you're talking about that first one when you're in that jar where that first key is on like level 1-2 probably.
Yep.
Yeah, if you're determined just to get out of there right away, yeah, it can be really harrowing having those guys pursue you like that.
Yeah. I would drop it immediately and then head for the door. I don't know if you can kill them. I wonder if this is one of those situations. Like a couple months back, you probably remember the GIF that was being passed around on Twitter of somebody fireballing a boo and killing it. And I didn't know that you could do that. Or maybe it was...
I saw people sliding down the hills and killing boos that way.
You could use
is that what you're talking about?
That might have been it. And then there was also a Tanuki suit one where you could become the statue and kill something that I didn't realize at all that you could do. And it blew my mind, even though I'm now 39 years old instead of 9 years old. So maybe this is one of those situations where you probably could deal with him in some way. I just never experimented or tried to do so.
Yeah, I think for the most part, you wouldn't be able to. I don't think you can just, you know, chuck a vegetable at them. Although,
I think you're right.
Yeah, if you're chucking a vegetable, you don't have the key, and so they'll probably have left you alone anyway.
That's true.
But, you know, most enemies in the game, you can just jump on their heads, but you could certainly not do that to the Phanto.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why he sucks.
I definitely agree.
Got anything else?
I did want to bring up the Abobos in Double Dragon.
Ah,
because
they're big. They're tough.
You see,
they're Bobos.
One of those pop out of a wall or like a building, like breakthrough. Mm-hmm. You know you're in for some pain. And you know you got to get those jump kicks just right so that you hit them in the head and knock them over.
Mm-hmm.
I always freaked out a little when they showed up. Was it bad enough when one of them showed up, but a little later in the game, multiple of them show up on the screen at the same time? And that was just... absolutely harrowing to me as a player.
Mm-hmm.
I knew I was going to go through a lot of health fighting them, even though probably now if I went back and replayed, it probably wouldn't be too bad. But when I was younger, it may not have been exactly what they could do, but they just looked so threatening.
They do. They were way bigger than all the other enemies in the game, and they were pretty dumb. That was the good thing, but... they were, like you said, they were really strong. They could really dish out a lot of damage and really, you know, do you in if you weren't really cautious.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one time that the game, like, somehow glitched up on me. Like, I think maybe I started to fall into the water somewhere. There was an Abobo there. But the result was that he caught me and just kept punching me forever. The game didn't lock up. But I got stuck somewhere. He just kept punching me forever, or over and over and over and over and over. And you know, I had no health left, and I could never actually die. And he just punched me for infinity until I had to turn the game off.
Oh, that's the worst. Of course, years later, he returned in Abobo's Big Adventure, which is a Flash game. I don't know if you played it. And
I know of it. I don't think I've played it, though.
I gained a little bit more respect back for Abobo.
He's also a playable character in Double Dragon 4, which, of course, is not on Nintendo systems, but it is out there. And while it's not a great game, the fact that you can play as Abobo is possibly my favorite thing about it.
That's awesome. I did not know that. Unfortunately, I have heard the same, that the game is not very good, so I've avoided it, even though I do love me some Double Dragon.
Yeah, I don't hate as much as some people do, but yeah, being able to play as a Bobo increased my appreciation of that game by about 60%. So the next one on my list is the Wall Master, or the Floor Master, take your pick, from the Legend of Zelda series. It's one thing in a video game to just, you know, run out of health and die and lose that way, but somehow it's even worse when an enemy just shows up out of nowhere, you know, drops from the ceiling, pops out of the wall, comes out of the floor and grabs you and takes you back and makes you lose all your progression. I don't know why, but for me, it's much worse than dying. And that is why I hate these guys. Just every time I see them, I'm like, oh, God, not one of those things.
I fully agree. And I'm so happy that they've never brought this enemy back. Right?
Well, they've come back plenty of times. I mean,
have they?
It was Wall Masters in the original Legend of Zelda. They were the blue hands that just sort of floated around.
Yep.
They were back in A Link to the Past.
Oh, you're right.
And they would drop out of the ceiling. That was possibly the worst, because they would show that shadow. And if you didn't get out of the way of that shadow, it would just drop right on you and grab you and take you back to the dungeon entrance.
Mm.
There's one part I specifically remember where you have to place a statue on a switch in a room with one of those things. And you're moving really slow trying to position the statue. And also the way you're doing it, you can't really see where the switch is because of the direction you're dragging it. Mm. And so it was really easy to get caught there just because of the way you were covering things up. And I especially hated that part.
That's the worst.
Let's see. I think they came back in Ocarina of Time. And there were definitely floor masters in Wind Waker. They're these big purple hands. They gave you a lot more opportunity to fight back and take them out in Wind Waker. But yeah, if you messed up, they would still get you there. And a lot of the times, even if you killed them, they would, you know, respawn again like 5 seconds later. I think that's usually how they were in, I want to say Link to the Past, they respawned really quickly. No matter how many times you take them out, they're always coming back.
Okay, I remember this.
Yeah, I really don't like those guys. I think they were in other games as well, but those are the ones that stand out the most to me.
See, I thought when you mentioned Floor Master that you were talking about the tiles that kind of come up from the floor, spin around, and then shoot at you. And those were annoying to me as well. Also, because of my young game playing skills, I couldn't quite get the timing down and would often lose at least a few hearts fighting a room full of those things.
Which Zelda was that? Was that Link to the Past?
That was the first one.
Okay. Yeah, I remember the floor tiles more in Link to the Past myself. And I could just stand in the doorway and they couldn't hit you there. So they never bugged me too much in that one.
That's a good tip.
But No, by Floor Masters, I meant their later variations where they just came out of the floor as opposed to the wall. So they got renamed in those later games. But yes, they are definitely among my biggest jerk enemies of all time.
They should really just be called the jerk hands.
people might take that the wrong way, though.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
All right, I think that does it for my list of my least favorite enemies, biggest jerk enemies. I guess there are lots more modern ones I could think of, especially in the new Zelda game, Breath of the Wild. You know, the Guardians, I'm considering they could possibly make the list of the all-time great jerks. And the Lynels, they could also certainly make the list.
Definitely the Lynels.
Hit you from, you know, infinity away, take off so much health, teleport all over the place. Yeah, I'm withholding judgment just yet because, I don't want to call them out as huge jerks only, a few weeks after the game is out, but I could definitely see them making the list.
I agree.
Anyway, I guess that does it for this week's show. Came out a little bit short this week, but don't worry, we're still going to have time for a dramatic reading. This time, it is an excerpt from the manual of, this is appropriate considering one of the jerk enemies we were just talking about, is from the opening in the manual of the NES game Double Dragon 2: The Revenge. This time they've gone too far. Nuclear war has ravaged the city, and a gang of ruthless criminals, the Black Shadow Warriors, are trying to take over. They're danger with a capital D. Thugs and muggers, tough street chicks, greasers and hoods, high jumpers and karate choppers, plus burly bosses, gruesome giants, and freaky androbots. First, they hit the universally famous Double Dragon Dojo, the home of the Double Dragon Warriors. Martial arts students there were in constant training, building their strength, developing invincible moves, honing their skills. But they weren't powerful enough. Or fast enough, because somehow the Black Shadow Warriors managed to overcome every one of the men in training, and then they committed the ultimate crime. They gunned down your girl, Marion. Only you and your brother are left to take on the entire army of Black Shadow Warriors, left to push them out of the city, to follow them back to the dangerous source of their operation, back to where their leader is, back to where you can avenge the loss of Marion. You'll have to use every Double Dragon martial arts move you've mastered. The punches and kicks, the elbow smashes and jump kicks, the hair pulls and hair throws, even the incredible spinning cyclone and hyper uppercut. The more you fight, the better you get. Which is a good thing, because the deeper you get into Black Shadow territory, the more difficult things get. This quest is unlike any you have ever embarked upon, with enemies unlike any you've ever encountered. In fact, You'll enter places no one outside of the Black Shadow Gang has ever dared to go. Places that hold a never-ending barrage of sheer terror. Places filled with warriors so evil, so treacherous, that only a Double Dragon warrior has a chance for survival. And that's where this adventure begins. Woo! That was a mouthful.
I love those stories from video game manuals, though. They're so great.
Oh, they are. And this game's got it all. It's got never-ending barrages, and it's got androbots. I'm not even sure what freaky androbots are, but they must be in there. Yeah. Doesn't mention a Bobo by name, though.
That's too bad.
Technically, I'm not sure if a Bobo was even in Double Dragon 2. There's one character I thought, you know, maybe was him, but it certainly didn't look like the one from Double Dragon 1. So
right.
Maybe he was off having his own adventure at that time or something.
Probably so.
Yeah. Anyway, I guess that does it for this week's episode. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at ChrisTheHoff, and you can find CJ at SuperPack. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and if you like the podcast, it would be great if you give us a rating on iTunes. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Chris Johnston.
See you later.
And my personal chef, the cooking mama.
Even better than mama.
We will see you next time.